Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our talk, the birth of study group 14, the Games and Low Latency Group. So I am Sean Middleditch. I am the lead server engineer at Wargaming Seattle.
My name is Nicholas. I'm a student at the University of Victoria. I'm currently working at Intel doing graphics stuff. I worked at Electronic Arts in the past.
And Michael Wong is the chair of the group, so a lot of this was put together with his hard work, so thanks to him for that. So quick overview about what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about what SG14 is, why it exists, how it fits into the standards committee. We're going to go over some bits about why SG14 needed to exist in our experience and opinion. Then we're going to go over a bit about what our current efforts in the study group are, what papers we're working on, the kind of things we're researching and getting ready to propose. And then we'll talk a bit about some of our upcoming efforts, our plans, and ways you guys can help out. So just kind of get everyone in the mood, this is a picture from a recent release from my company. This is World of Warships from Wargaming, made by my colleagues in St. Petersburg. So you can get kind of an idea as to the level of graphics going on here. And then in-game, these ships have huge batteries of guns. There's a whole lot of things going on. So I kind of want you to get a sense of what exactly it is we're doing in the games industry, looking at this amazing picture. It's going to be, I think, the only nice, pretty screenshot, so soak it in. Another interesting fact, something that I found kind of surprising myself, is that game developers are the third largest group of developers using C++ regularly after the banking and finance industry. So there's kind of a sense with some people that games are sort of a niche, and that's not true. Third largest, I think we've kind of surpassed the niche category.
I'm going to begin by talking to you about the origin of SG14 and how we got to the point which is today. Thanks. So it all began at CPPCon 2014 last year. There was a panel that was called Grill the Committee, where audience members were invited to go ask questions to the committee in an attempt to grill them. So at this panel, I went up to the microphone and asked them if anybody there was representing the games industry. And there was kind of an awkward silence, not really a good answer. And so at the end of this panel, at the end of that panel, there was Michael Wong, who is sitting in this room somewhere. Where's Michael? Oh, there he is, Michael Wong. So Michael Wong stood up and came to me and some other game developers who were in the room and suggested that we talk more about the issues that game developers have with the C++ programming language. So we organized an impromptu meeting at CPPCon 2014 where all the game developers there got together. We talked about some issues, we went for lunch, it was a good time. And then when CPPCon 2014 was over, Sean Middleditch here created a Google group where people were invited to come and talk about various issues in game development with C++. So for months we talked about various topics, just pretty much saying whatever came on our mind and just having these discussions about various problems and solutions related to the C++ programming language. And finally we decided to take a bunch of our a bunch of these threads on that Google group and kind of merge them together into one paper, which is N4456. And this document, it's an official ISO, paper. And it was presented by Michael Wong and Billy Baker in Lenexa at the Spring 2015 Standards Committee meeting. It was very well received. A lot of people there echoed exactly what was said on the paper. And it was so good, in fact, that it was suggested that we actually form a new study group, Study Group 14, where we would be officially talking about the concerns of game developers and low latency in terms of C++, with Michael Wong as a chair. As well as creating the group, we decided to organize two meetings. The first meeting was at CPPCon 2015, so this year, actually this Wednesday. And the next meeting is going to be at the Game Developers Conference, GDC, in 2016, hosted by Sony. They're going to be hosting the meeting. So this is a picture from the isocp.org website. It shows the organization of the committee as a whole. And you can see here that among all the study groups, we are the newest one, SG14, Game Dev and Low Latency. So legit. One of the main goals of SG14 is to improve the communication between the game development community and the standard C++ committee. So you can see here, it's kind of like a bi-directional relationship. We have the industry members, the game developers, and et cetera, who come to C++ events and meetings to be able to share their opinion on what needs to be changed in the language and present papers to the committee. And on the other hand, we want to have standard C++ committee people to come to meet game developers at events such as GDC to return feedback on the papers and proposals written by game developers and, you know, hopefully find some middle ground in the problems that are going to be presented. Pretty quick after we started looking at this issue of improving C++ for game development, we also noticed that a lot of our issues actually overlap with a lot of different fields of C++. So these are just some examples. For example, simulation and training software, it's very similar to games. If you think about it, it's basically just games, but more serious. There's always an element of interactive simulation, real-time graphics, latency computation. This is an aspect that's also shared by finance and trading. They also want the lowest latency possible. And embedded systems, which are almost by definition a design space where you actually have very constrained resources, and that's a very similar theme to a lot of game development that goes on. So this is our presence on the web. We have a Google group. Everyone's welcome to post. It's not passworded. You don't need to register an account or anything. You can just go there and you can just post about stuff. So you're welcome to discuss problems and solutions with the C++ programming language with us and create new papers and proposals. We also have a GitHub repository that was created by Guy Davidson, sitting over there. On this GitHub, you can find the current state of the proposals and usually some example code if it's a proposal that has code associated with it. So check it out. And for now, I'll pass to Sean to talk to you about control and reliability.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about why SG14 needed to exist. So one of the themes in game development is that game developers are really all about control. We work with a lot of interesting embedded systems, consoles. We have a lot of performance needs in terms of getting our frames rendered within a hard deadline to make sure we're not dropping frames or getting a jittery kind of output. We're dealing with constrained memory systems. So we really need it that when we want our code to do a specific thing, it's doing that and nothing else. We have to kind of control the bounds of where our application is going. So on these themes, one of the things that we deal with a lot is the issue of memory usage. And this has some interesting implications that are maybe not similar to other types of software. One of the big things we have to run into quite a bit are in the embedded space are devices that don't have swap space, don't have virtual memory necessarily. We have a fixed amount of memory, sometimes a very small amount of memory, and that memory is shared not just with the data that our application wants to kind of operate over, but also all of the artistic content that the artists have put together, the levels the level designers have put together, and all the geometry that goes into that. So a very, very large chunk of our memory is eaten up by content and not necessarily all the other algorithms or whatnot we have to write. On a lot of these platforms, we're also dealing with homogeneous memory systems. So the CPU and the GPU are sharing a single memory bank. So unlike a PC where you get to copy your textures up to a video card and kind of forget about the memory usage in some cases, we're sharing, like, say, 512 megs across everything, like video, textures, pretty much every piece of data we have. On a similar note, we run into problems with computation time. There are certain aspects of C++ that really bite game developers pretty hard, or any real-time developer. A favorite of mine to pick on are the value add that certain compilers and implementations have in terms of debug iterators and features like that. It can be difficult to make a simple toy 2D game hit 60 frames a second when you've got debug iterators turned on. And of course, turning debug iterators off is a magic incantation that is different for each and every compiler, so it's a bit of black magic to make sure that your game is going to work properly on the PC, Linux, OS X, various consoles without having issues because of these extra features that have been added. A related feature to that we run into a bit are built-in features in C++, like RTTI, used for the dynamic cast feature. There's a lot of overhead that the compiler will put into your code in terms of data structures and whatnot that we don't necessarily need or want, to the point where game developers who do actually need things like dynamic cast in some cases will re-implement it entirely from scratch just to make sure that we have the amount of control we need in terms of the runtime bounds of our TTI and the amount of memory used by it. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us that we have to re-implement core features of the language just in order to get them better than they are in the language itself. We run into also similar cases with some of the standard containers where the idea of big O notation and how fast an algorithm or data structure is going to work with certain operations isn't necessarily fast enough. Big O of log n is not the same if you're talking big O of log n spread across memory versus an operation that uses a tighter bound of memory and has better cache locality of reference. A related topic to the locality of reference with containers are the inconsistent allocation patterns that some of the standard containers have. And these are issues like the standard vector. Standard vector is one of the simplest containers in the standard library, but there's a lot of open questions about how exactly this container is going to behave. For instance, the container has to grow when you push back into it, but it's not necessarily defined what that growth factor is. So if you're working on a system that has a fairly constrained memory budget where you have to control exactly how much memory is being used, you need to be able to rely on how much memory a particular operation is going to consume and not have it eat up so this much on one platform and this much on another platform that makes your portability quite a bit harder. And then there are certain containers in the standard, certain implementations that even use this feature, where they will allocate by default. You create an empty container that you might not even use, and yet the memory allocator has been hit and you're paying all the costs, both in runtime and space for that allocation. So there's issues like standard function is a popular one I see complained about online a bit. Since it's not specified how much size standard function can take in terms of a lambda you might put into it. So there are a number of developers who will avoid standard function, even in cases when they should really use it, simply because they can't depend on whether or not it's going to allocate on this platform or not on another platform. We need that consistency. There are similar features such as standard async, one we don't necessarily use a lot, but it's not specified if this is using a thread pool or how this is communicating the job to a thread. So we'll re-implement things from scratch simply because we need this consistent behavior on every single platform. We can't use what the standard is providing largely because it's not specified tight enough that we can depend on its behavior. We see this isn't just a problem for games either. We can see that there's a number of applications and libraries outside of the game space that run into similar problems. So we have complete STL or nearly complete STL, partial STL replacements. ESDL, obviously from games, from Electronic Arts. But we see things like STL port that was really popular in games for a number of years. We see things like Facebook's Folly library and their implementation of standard vector. Again, most basic container in the standard. They re-implemented it from scratch. We also get LLVM's library has a re-implementation of a lot of basic containers that really they should just be able to use what's in the standard. There's also a number of features in C++ that are traditionally considered very costly. There's a feeling that some of these might be more myths or kind of folklore from back in the early days of C++ and not necessarily accurate with today's modern compilers. So part of what we're doing in SG14 is analyzing these issues, making sure that they are, in fact, real issues today with modern compilers. Some of these include RTTI, which you mentioned previously, virtual functions, the inlining supports of C++, and exceptions. So virtual functions is kind of a favorite example of mine, because some of you might remember back in the early days of C++, there was a lot of these traditional C programmers complaining that virtual functions were too costly, they'd have too much of a performance overhead. And that's not so much true today. On our modern CPUs, the work that Intel and AMD are doing, the indirection of a virtual function is practically free unless you're in a super hot inner loop or something like that. However, there are still platforms that game developers are targeting that don't have these hardware improvements. Some of the last generation of consoles suffered significant performance degradation from indirection through things like virtual functions. And you could get a 5% frame boost just by getting rid of some virtual calls that weren't even in a hot path. So it is still an issue that affects us today. We also run into things like the inlining support. I can't remember a single game engine I have ever looked at that wasn't using a custom macro for the compiler-specific force inline attribute. And this, again, comes back to the control aspect of this section of the slides. If a game developer knows that this needs to be inline, this is a hot function, we don't want to leave it up to the compiler and their heuristics and guessing. We want it inlined. Inline it now, please. Exceptions in RTTI are kind of a hot topic or sort of a contentious topic in the C++ community. You'll hear a lot of game developers say, we don't like exceptions, we turn them off. And then you get other people saying, you know, it's silly, turn them on, they're a standard part of C++. We had a lot of great talks, keynotes during this conference from Bjarney and Herb talking about not wanting to fracture the language ecosystem, not wanting to have these subsets or specialized versions of the language. Unfortunately, games have, pretty much since the beginning of C++ and this feature being available, turned off exceptions. So the language is already fractured. This isn't a theoretical problem or something we're approaching. It's already the fact of the landscape. So one of the things we're looking at SG14 is how do we address this issue? How do we either make it so game developers can use exceptions, or how do we make the language less fractured when exceptions are turned off? So one of the problems that comes about from this that I've been experiencing quite a bit lately is I'll see a neat library on GitHub, some open source library that maybe solves a problem I have, and I want to use it. I would maybe like to contribute back to it, be able to supply patches or use implementation experience, whatnot. But in games, I can't even use a library sometimes because maybe it uses exceptions. So it's got a try statement or a throw statement in it. And when you turn off exceptions in a lot of compilers, it becomes a compilation error to use those language features. So instead of having a library that simply doesn't necessarily work fully because exceptions are turned off, we have a library that doesn't work at all. Hence, I can't use it. Hence, I will never contribute to it, or I will not participate in that aspect of the community. And there's a large part of the C++ community that's not related to games that we don't get to participate in, and that part of the community is not getting feedback from our expertise or our time investments. And that's kind of a shame. It'd be great if we could all kind of work together. We're using the same language. We shouldn't be segregated by core language features. This isn't necessarily just a problem with games either. There are the very first two hits I got when I searched for C++ coding standards with exceptions when I was on Google were the LLVM and the Google coding style guidelines, which actually tell users not to use exceptions or RTTI. They even say, you know, these are banned in our code base in some cases. So not just games complaining about some of these issues. So the next topic I want to talk about are metrics and performance, specifically how we do some of our instrumentation and some of our kind of more specialized needs with performance in games as compared to more traditional software. So we're going to talk a bit about memory budgets again. One of the interesting things that we alluded to earlier was in games we deal a lot with content, a lot of artists and level designers who are putting things into our games. So what this means is with our limited memory budget, a lot of that budget eaten up by the content people, they need feedback as to what they need to change with their content to make things fit in a memory budget. More traditional profilers and instrumentation tools are very programmer focused. They're kind of really based on helping us find out if our data structures are correct or if our algorithms are running efficiently. And they don't do a whole lot to tell a designer that, hey, you know, you can only have four trees in this area of this level rather than, you know, 10 trees or whatever the case might be. So there's a lot of need we have for not just instrumenting our code and our data structures for programmer consumption, but also making sure that we're supplying a lot of user-oriented data. If we've got an allocator with some memory tracking, for example, we don't want to just tell the programmer that, you know, they're using this many bytes on their algorithm. We need to tell the user, you've used this many bytes with your content, and these are the different, you know, breakdowns of content, trees versus, you know, boxes versus enemies, things like that, and what their budgets are and where they're kind of going over those budgets. So this is a kind of quick example. It's more of a brain dump. These aren't directly taken from any code base, just kind of a pattern I see quite a bit, some simpler patterns. So you might see games that define a group of allocators, for example, or a group of buckets for allocators. These are where all of our graphics data goes, and we break that down maybe into textures and meshes. And then we might break things down to game objects, and then game objects might have entities versus, you know, doors or things like that. And then we might possibly start tagging our actual classes with an allocator. So in this case, this macro use allocator is actually overriding class operator new and delete. We had a question on our expert panel Wednesday. Someone had mentioned that they've been working with C++ for years and had never seen an overload of class operator new and delete. And that's something we use all the time in games. You know, it's not necessarily the most flexible thing to say that, you know, this particular class is always used for this one thing. But realistically speaking, if you've got a class called Vertex Mesh, it's going to hold vertex meshes. It's going to be really related to graphics, and it's doing that one thing, and it's just a lot easier for us to tag up this class, especially with some of the pains of the C++ allocator interface that Andre alluded to in his talk yesterday. There are engines that'll use a more data-driven approach, kind of like the final example here, where we'll say, you know, data loaded from these files, you go into this memory bucket, or we might do things in a little bit more data-driven way. There's certainly more advanced ways that memory allocation can be tracked. Scott had some great examples from EA's profiler he talked about earlier this week. So again, this is what fits on a slide. So in terms of the allocator interfaces, a lot of this was actually gone over by Andre. There are certain pains with the allocator interface, especially for games. The lack of alignment support is a huge problem, particularly because we deal with SIMD or certain exotic platforms where we're dealing with graphics, GPU issue items that have kind of really strict alignment requirements. And there's also cases where, because we want to tag so many of our allocators with debug information, the need to specify the type ends up in these like really long things where you have a standard of vector of int, then specialize in an allocator of ints with, you know, maybe this extra tag information. And of course, if it's not just an int, then you end up specifying types multiple times. It's a huge pain. We'll rewrite our standard library in our game using a custom allocator interface in a large part just for our own sanity and ease of use. It's kind of silly that we have to do that. You know, why isn't the standard giving us kind of a better and more ergonomic interface for allocators? So we also have some interesting performance consideration. I mentioned earlier about some of the hardware we target isn't similar to the desktop class or even server class hardware that many of you might be more familiar with. Intel has some amazing optimizations in their CPUs that you don't necessarily find in all the different embedded devices or game consoles out there. So there is hardware that has either no branch prediction or really terrible branch prediction. So that kind of general advice of remove branches from your code goes from a nice-to-do optimization to an essential optimization that can be the difference between a game that can ship at 60 frames a second or not. We run into cases where cache locality, because the hardware's prefetching unit isn't as strong. So we got to be much, much more careful about how we access memory, you know, where it's laid out, in whether or not we use prefetching instructions, things like that. We can't rely on the compiler or the hardware to kind of optimize things behind our back as much. We also run into an interesting case where performance matters when debugging. I see all the time on forums people say, you know, use this abstraction and the optimizer will make it fast for you. Well, that's nice when the optimizer does a lot of work for you, but we care about speed when debugging. The phrase I like to use is that having a slow debug build can be the difference between having a debuggable interactive game and having a debuggable slideshow. And when you're trying to test certain things, you really need the interactivity part up there. So we run into a lot of issues where, you know, the memory usage and performance are kind of tightly coupled, even more so than it is on the PC. And we need, in some cases, better algorithms and data structures to help deal with some of these issues. So on that front, there are some algorithms that are not currently in the standard library that I see re-implemented time and time again in a lot of game engines, and it'd be nice if it was available. A very easy example is Radix Sort. So the standard library, of course, has standard sort, which is a generalized sort and can work for pretty much any type that you can do, you know, less than comparison for. Radix Sort only works for integer keys. It's much more limited, much more specialized in terms of what types you can sort. But we can actually, in a lot of cases, form an integer key for data that isn't itself an integer. So we'll see this a lot in certain graphics architectures, where we can take all the attributes of what it is we're rendering, generate from that an integer key with different bits representing which mesh or which material, things like that, and then sort off that key very, very, very efficiently with Radix Sort, and use that for our order-dependent rendering when necessary. There's also a lot of needs with spatial and geometric algorithms or data. A lot of games have very specialized needs here, so we wouldn't necessarily want an entire, you know, geometric library in the standard. But we run into weird cases where, for example, every engine ends up having a point class and a vector class. And then every middleware that we end up using has a point class and a vector class. And then we're constantly shuffling data back and forth with all these incompatible types. We have game engines that might have 3, 4, 5 different math libraries in them, and so much time and effort and energy is just spent shuffling back and forth. So perhaps the standard could offer a more consistent set of standard tools and kind of ease some of our pains there. We also run into issues with some of the math functions. A lot of the game engines I've seen will have overridden versions of even things like square root or certain other related math functions where we want faster but perhaps less precise versions of these algorithms. So perhaps there's some room there for the standard to give developers a little bit more control to decide whether or not they want the imprecise fast math or the super precise slower math, kind of ease a bit of development there. Maybe let the experts with numerics kind of really optimize a nice fast version of something rather than us having to re-implement everything from scratch. And on a related front, we run into containers we don't have that we re-implement in game engines quite a bit. Intrusive linked lists are super common. We don't want to necessarily pay the overhead of, say, standard list where there's a separate node that has to be allocated and the extra memory space of that and the actual just the time to call the allocator, deallocator for things that maybe already exist. We run into a case with the hash table that's currently in the standard, the unordered map, unordered set. Due to a weird quirk in its specification, it actually has to allocate a node every time you insert into it. There's the overhead in terms of the allocator there, and then iterating through the hash table if you have to do it can be a bit slower because things aren't contiguous in memory. So a lot of games will re-implement a different hash table for speed and consistency and less allocator overhead. There's also some use for other contiguous containers. There's the flat container proposal I've been working on, kind of based on boost flat map, flat set. The idea being is sometimes you just need a key lookup pair of ordered elements on like an unordered map, but you don't want to have a tree-based node allocated, kind of tree structure like we have in the standard map or standard set. There's also almost every library I've seen has some kind of stack containers. So say stack vector, things like that. I've seen it in LLVM. It's, Google has one. Pretty much every game engine has one. It's difficult to implement those nicely with the standard allocator pattern. So we'll usually just create a new class, but there's some work maybe the committee can do either in terms of making standard vector usable with stack allocation or implementing a new type. So one of the other things we run into a lot that's kind of, I feel, different from what I see in the wider programming community is the difference between average case and worst case time. We see big O notation a lot, and people talk about this is a big O log n algorithm or data structure, but they don't really necessarily pay a whole lot of attention to the worst case time. And so if we're working with a game and we're just barely fitting within, say, our 16 millisecond budget to get 60 frames a second in the average case, and then there's a worst case that can come along, we'll miss our frame and the user sees some stutter in the game and there's a problem there. So we need to make sure that if we've got this budget of 16 milliseconds, we never ever go over 16 milliseconds. And that means that if we have to plan, for the worst case in some of these algorithms and make sure that the budget is set up appropriately so that things will be consistent. Kind of a related topic that I see come up a lot, and one of the reasons we use C++ is the issue of garbage collection. So people will talk about garbage collection in languages like Java or C#, ease development, but then they also bring up performance. There's a lot of research that indicated garbage collectors are faster than manual memory management. And this may be true. The garbage collectors might have the ability to localize a lot more of their memory management because they're just doing all of it in one big go. They don't have to chase a whole bunch of pointers like reference counting might. And there's definitely some truth to them being faster overall, less overall time spent managing memory in a garbage collector than manual. But the issue we run into in games, again, is we've got this consistent 16 milliseconds for 60 frames a second we have to hit. And we need this predictable worst-case performance. So even if we've got all this overhead in terms of managing references, it is a deterministic, predictable overhead. We know that right here, when I drop this reference, that's when I'm going to dereference pointers. That's when I'm going to change reference counts. That's when I'm going to deallocate memory or put things back into a pool. Whereas a garbage collector kind of happens whenever. There might be some control in some garbage collectors, but not as much as we need. You also run into cases where the garbage collector, because you don't necessarily predict when it's going to run, you might run out of memory sooner than you think. Because again, we have very, very constrained hardware budget, so we need to know that if we're done with something, we need to free that memory now, not when the garbage collector decides it's important. So this graphic just kind of indicates the idea of throughput versus latency. Maybe less time is taken overall inside the GC, but if it's all happening right, we're trying to get ready to submit a frame to the hardware, to render a screen, then we're going to miss that, and that's going to be a problem. It's not predictable enough. And I'll let Nick take this section.
Thank you. So I'd like to talk about a topic that is close to my heart, I would say. I'll talk about fun and productivity. because if we're going to be going to work every day working with the same language, it might as well be fun. And we're making games. This should be fun. And I think making games, even as a programmer, it's a creative endeavor. And you have to be able to iterate on ideas quickly in order to be productive and to make something that's really fun. If you've been to game design talks at other conferences, you'll often hear talk about game feel. And game feel is like when you're playing the game, it's like, how does it feel? Does it feel good? Or is it like fun? And like a lot of, you know, improving the game feel of a game is to be productive, is to do like a lot of iteration. And to do it a lot of iteration, you have to be productive. So C++ has some issues in this area. One easy example, easy target, is long compilation times. So it actually, in a big team, it tends to take a lot of engineering effort to be able to compile a game in a reasonable amount of time for any kind of iteration to make sense, either with a distributed build system of some kind or going through the trouble of setting up all these like pimple things to lower the dependencies. But also, there's some conflicts with the design of the language. So for example, many C++ experts will advocate the use of std unique pointer and std array as safer alternatives to the raw C versions of these objects. The problem is that when you use std unique pointer and std array, this means that, first of all, you have to include the headers that define them. So that's some code bloat in terms of just more file I/O you have to do to be able to include those headers. But also, using these safer versions of these objects requires you to instantiate more templates. And these template instantiations, first of all, it's more work for the compiler, but also bloats your executable. So it's kind of, I think it's acceptable to say that C with classes style code, where you use less C++ features, tends to compile faster. And so that's often a preferred approach by some game developers. And finally here, I'm just listing out a bunch of reasons why C++ is kind of slow to compile. Just lots of file I/O because of the include system, complex grammar. C++ is one of the most complicated grammars you can possibly find out there in a production language. Template instantiation, of course, easy target. Optimizations, which is a tricky one because actually we want a good static optimizations, but that comes at a cost. Another aspect of productivity that I think is important and maybe more unique to game development is the fact that loading takes a long time. So even if the compilation time was instantaneous, the fact is that every time you restart the game, you have to sit there and wait for all the assets to be brought into memory again. And all the parse, you have to parse some data sets sometimes, and it just tends to take a long time. So this is made even worse by the fact that in debug builds, which you might be working in to find a bug, it's going to take even longer to load the level. Like, you can sit there for like minutes waiting for it to load, because when you're working on the game, the loading hasn't been optimized yet, and you're working in debug mode. It's desirable to be able to iterate faster than this. And a lot of the time, game developers will even just not use debug mode for the reasons of slow loading or just the game being too slow itself. And this means that game developers spend a lot of time actually just debugging release code, which is much trickier to do. So game developers are looking for a lot of solutions to try to be more productive with C++. And so edit and continue features in IDEs or game engines are very much appreciated. There's also a lot of use of scripting languages for the purpose of live reloading scripts while the game is running without having to turn it off and on again. And of course, also shading languages, which give you a similar ability, but for the graphics side of things. All right, so next topic is to talk about the current efforts. So we had a meeting on Wednesday where we discussed a bunch of issues. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to try to summarize what we've done and what's going to be done with those things that we looked at. So one of the main proposals we were looking at is fixed point numbers. So this is an effort led by Lawrence Crowell and John McFarlane, who I think are, John McFarlane's over there. Is Lawrence here? I don't know. Okay. So this is kind of an overlap with numerics, with a numerics study group. So we have these two different proposals here. We have one by John, which is our proposal, I guess, and we have the proposal by Crowell, which I think is from the numerics group. So there's some pretty compelling uses of fixed point numbers in game development, mainly on platforms where floating points support is either non-existent or very slow. On those platforms, it tends to be that, for example, if you do a bit of floating point operations, that code actually gets compiled into hundreds of lines of assembly to emulate it, and that's just not acceptable. So there's a lot of games out there where basically instead of using floating point numbers for all their math, they just type def like a real class or something, or a real type def that just uses a fixed point class, and then just use that everywhere and hope that the precision is not going to be a problem. I think also there's a lot of good uses for fixed point in terms of just places where it actually logically makes sense to have a uniform precision on a data set. So here's one example from my domain, which is graphics, where if you want to be able to refer to specific subpixel locations, like locations within a pixel, you generally want to use fixed point coordinates, just because then you don't favor the particularly the first pixel at the top left of the screen to have all the precision, which doesn't really make sense. So this proposal is proposing a standard fixed point class and a make fixed to be able to create a fixed point number with a specific number of bits for the integer and fractional part. And these people are going to be proposed that are going to be discussed at the Kona meeting later this year. So next proposal is the ring buffer, which I think maybe has a different name now. This effort is led by Guy Davidson, who's sitting over there. It's a contiguous FIFO buffer. So basically the idea is that you want to be able to push things on one end and pop them off the other end. Pretty common, but there's no good like built-in class for this purpose yet in the standard. Basically leading to people using stuff like deck or linked lists, which tend to have the problem of being discontinuous in memory. So the idea of this proposal is to create a container that's contiguous memory to get that better locality and usually easier to work with other kinds of interfaces. So some examples are feeding audio samples to a DAC or queuing up network packets. In general, this is useful for communication between threads of some kind. And there's two basic classes that have been proposed here, the static ring and dynamic ring, where the static ring is similar to a standard array where the size is fixed at compile time, and the dynamic ring, which is backed by a dynamic container such as a vector to allow you to resize the ring at runtime. Oh, and this is going to be looked at Kona later this year. There's been some proposals to just patch up the interfaces for working with raw memory, an effort led by Brent Friedman, who is in the crowd today, over there. So these are kind of maybe obscure, but actually pretty useful if you're writing custom allocators and such. For example, raw storage iterator allows you to, it creates an output iterator that actually is able to work on uninitialized memory. And the problem is that it's missing the move and in place kind of functionality there. So it only does copies right now. So working to improve that. Then there's a bunch of algorithms here, std destroy, an uninitialized move, uninitialized value construct, et cetera, which are just useful for when you want to do a construction on a range of uninitialized memory, for example, or call a destructor on a range of memory. And then we have unstable remove, which is kind of interesting, where the current like std remove function, if you use it on a vector, for example, the elements you remove will not disturb the order of the rest of the elements in the vector. And that's done by removing that element and then like shuffling everything down, a linear operation. What we're suggesting is to make a remove where it doesn't have that linear overhead. And one way of doing that is to just, and I don't think it's the way it's proposed, but one simple way is to swap the current element or the element you want to remove and the last element, and then doing pop back. So it's just a simple way to do it. So you lose the stability of the order of the elements, but it's O of one, so awesome. And this is also going to be discussed at Kona later this year. Another effort is the flat associative containers. Sean here is leading that effort, and he talked about it earlier in this talk. Basically, the idea here is just that containers like std map and std set tend to have very poor memory locality and also very unpredictable memory access. Just due to the fact that individual nodes are created. And so what we're trying to do is create containers that store the equivalent of a std map or std set, but contiguous in memory, as shown in the picture here. There is some trade-off here, for example, the fact that if you have an iterator and you insert or delete, that iterator won't make sense anymore. So that's one of the main motivations of std map and std set having individual nodes. But we're ready to accept that trade-off for our uses. There's also an interesting effort in trying to make the STL more thread safe. This is still a very early effort, and we're going to look more into it. But Brett Seals is on this, so is Brett in the crowd? I don't know. Okay. So another interesting idea is to think about the thread stack size. So this is Patrice, who's been working on this. Patrice is over there. he suggested that maybe the standard thread class should be able to specify the size of the stack that you're going to be using for that thread at creation time. So this is kind of a tricky issue because some people might suggest that you can just get the native handle and do whatever. But the problem is that by the time you have the native handle, that thread was already created. It already has a stack size. So you can't control it using that. And so what we need is actually an extension of the thread creation interface that lets you specify, if possible, exactly the amount of memory you want for your thread. Because this is actually a requirement of game developers is to be able to create a thread with an exact memory requirements and not any more or less. So I think Patrice is going to present that in Kona himself, since I think he might be there. Okay, so there'll be discussions in Kona about this. Another interesting effort is also led by Patrice here is the exception cost analysis. So like Sean was saying, like exception cost has been historically expensive, but there's a lot of folklore about it. Like, is it really true that it's still slow or maybe the new exception models are faster? And we want to make sure that our concerns are actually true before we go further with this. So Patrice did a very interesting post on the mailing list where he did a bunch of tests, kind of artificial, it's micro benchmarks, but it's still very interesting, where he tried a bunch of different combinations of using exceptions in different ways and seeing the effect of performance on different compilers. So far, the outlook is mostly bad, and like exceptions seem to, in general, make it slower, but still, there's some cases where it's actually faster because of not, we're theorizing because it doesn't have to do as many checks and doesn't have to return things as much if you use exceptions, just less redundant code. So it's still, still up for debate, and it'd be interesting to have, if possible, some cases that are more realistic in terms of how games work. So assuming this is a real problem, like this is the assumption we went with, that exceptions are a real problem, and like what Sean was saying, it's like, it's not even an option where, like, even if you manage to argue that exceptions are somehow faster or better or equivalent, the truth is that game developers right now don't use them. And the platforms they work on discourage using them to the point of either not supporting them or just like turning it off by default or et cetera. So basically at this point, we got no choice but to try to figure out how we can work these two dialects of the C++ language together where one has exceptions and one doesn't. And we thought of a bunch of different ways to address this problem still very early, but we're looking for help in this area. So if you have some expertise, that'd be very much appreciated. All right, we have some other work being done that's not really part of SG14, but is relevant to SG14's interest. For example, is coroutines, an effort led by Gora and David. This is actually, like, I've had AI programmers come to me personally and say that they'd love to have coroutines because they're tired of writing behavior trees. So it seems to me like this is actually very relevant to our interests, and we should make sure that even if this is an effort led by a different group, that whatever's going on there is going to be not in one way or other in a shape that is not acceptable for games. Another idea is to take functions in the standard library that currently throw on failure and make them instead return an error code, like offering two different versions of the same function, for example, just to make it so that we can still use the standard library without having to worry about exceptions being thrown in a bunch of cases. Of course, SIMD is very much ingrained in the culture of game development. It's been there for a long time, ever since people have been doing transform and lighting on the CPU. SG14 is not really involved yet, but there's some papers on this topic, like actually a bunch of them. You can go look them up. Some are suggesting like an array of struct design where you have a vector of t of size n or something, and other ones where it's more like instruction level parallelism, but in a more like parallelism way where you have like a force SIMD, thinking more about the control flow. So interesting topics that we need to look more into.
Can you explain what that is?
Explain what?
Yeah, what's SIMD?
What's SIMD? So SIMD, for anybody who's not familiar, SIMD is a kind of a general term for a single instruction, multiple data, which are instructions on your CPU that let you operate on more than one operand at a time. So for example, normally when you add two floats together, it's just one float plus one float equals one more float. But with SIMD, for example, one of the common uses is the streaming SIMD instructions, or streaming SIMD exceptions instruction set, which lets you take four floats, four other floats, and add them in parallel. So you get like this parallel of four combinations of floats being added in one instruction. So that's the idea. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. So now I'm going to give it up to Sean to talk about the future.
All right, so now this is part of the talk where we enter the future. All right, so there's some other current work that folks are looking at as part of SG14 or interested in looking at as part of SG14. We've had, none of these yet have papers or have been discussed by the group as a large. There's been maybe posts on mailing lists kind of expressing interest, but no serious discussion as of yet. So one of the cases that Matthew Bentley brought up are some containers that he calls PLF colony, PLF stack. These are variants to certain containers that are already represented in the standard library, but these have different memory allocation patterns, kind of different growth patterns as things go into them, and have pretty significantly different performance characteristics. Kind of important to us. There's further work on the intrusive containers that's being investigated. I mentioned the intrusive linked list before, but there's possibly some interest in intrusive trees, intrusive map, or even just getting the intrusive linked list itself in. So this is something that's being looked into as to how we can do this, and it's kind of based a bit on Boost for initial investigation. There's also the GPU accelerator support. So today, if you are working with a GPU, you have to use some external library. You've got to drop out of C++ and go to OpenCL or CUDA or OpenMP, OpenACC. There's so many different variants of this, C++ AMP. So what we'd like is perhaps a way that we don't have to rely on third-party libraries or completely different languages to do what is becoming an increasingly common operation of modern computers. So much of our computing is done these days on these big giant math coprocessors we call GPUs. So it'd be nice if C++ kind of had a more direct and usable way of interfacing with these external systems. There's also directions that we would be interested in going, but we don't have everyone signed up for the work yet. No one's expressed interest in some of these specific topics. There's new containers and algorithms I mentioned previously, radix sort. We've had no one kind of step up to write a proposal or really see that through. So that's something we could use some help with. There's also a need for possibly some refinement to the existing containers, either stricter requirements like the growth patterns I mentioned earlier, or small tweaks that could make containers that we can't really use today, maybe make them usable in the future so we don't have to keep re-implementing things over and over again and fragmenting the community. So again, no one's really signed up to really investigate any of those particular problems. And there's some smaller miscellaneous issues. We've got the algorithm header in C++, which is a bit of a monstrosity. It's pretty much every algorithm in the language. So you might want, std min, std max, this tiny little one-liner, and then you've got to pull in, thousands of lines of algorithm and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lines of dependency on some implementations, and then you get all the problems that Nick mentioned with compile time overhead. And again, just for a one-liner like std min is kind of extreme. And there's some other overhead issues with exceptions. Obviously, we started looking into that, but we haven't started looking into RTTI yet and what the overhead is there, and whether or not that's something that's still an issue today with modern compilers, or kind of rule out if it's folklore or still issues that need to be resolved, and then what those resolutions are. So as far as where we're going next, that's a large part where you guys come in, both you and the audience today, people watching on YouTube. Stuff in C++ happens because people are passionate about C++ and do the work to investigate the issues, write proposals, discuss the issues, and bring it to the committee to talk about. The committee isn't just kind of sitting there designing things behind closed curtains. It's all pushed by people who are writing proposals and writing papers and discussing things. So there's definitely room to have more people contribute. We always use more people contributing. And SG14 is a great place. I mean, we're really open. We've got the public mailing list. We're going to have the meeting at GDC. So if you're a game developer and you're interested in improving C++, this is the place to do it. This is the group to get in contact with and start talking. Start writing proposals and start making awesome games with C++. So thank you. That's been our talk. And if anyone has questions, now's the time.
To mitigate the build problems in terms of time, do you guys use Unity builds at all?
Repeat the question.
So the question was, to improve build times, do we use things like Unity builds? And I mean, the actual specific way that the problem is solved depends a lot on the specific studio. but definitely a lot of people will use Unity builds to solve that problem.
Question far against the wall there?
Yeah, so one of the issues you brought up was vector allocation as an example of the types of things that are maybe not ideal with the standard library. So do you think the solution to that is going to lean towards refining the standard to say, maybe specify the types of allocation, or is it a new data type that might be created?
All right, so the question is about the topic I mentioned with the standard vector and the allocation patterns and whether or not we think we need a new type or a change to the existing type. And so I don't know. This is kind of an open question that we need further discussion and people who kind of know this topic pretty well to get involved. It could be a new container. It could be a tighter specification of the current container that says it's always 1.5 and it never allocates when it's empty. Maybe, or it could be a new policy or template parameter. There's a lot of ways of solving some of these problems. There's discussion needs to happen about what is going to be the best way that has the most forward looking solution, the most least impact on existing users. It's open question. Another question over here. Yeah, so that's one of the solutions we brainstormed. Is there perhaps a way that we can make it so instead of being a compile error? Oh, sorry. Yeah, the question is, have we looked at terminating a process when an exception is thrown rather than going through the whole handling chain? So yeah, we brainstormed a lot of solutions. So one of the current issues again is that right now it's just a compile error to throw. So a potential solution is instead of making it a compile error, we kind of do what game developers do anyway, which is just crash, just abort. And then there's questions. Obviously, there's a lot of discussion there. There's libraries that perhaps rely on throwing exceptions for control flow, which I think we all know is a terrible idea, but people do it. Is this a fragmentation issue with the community? And there's so many different solutions and a lot of, again, open questions there. So we've got a paper we're going to be working on to float some of these suggestions past the committee and kind of get some more feedback from them. But there's definitely further discussion there. So yes, that is one of the solutions we've looked at. And that's pretty close to what game developers do today.
Another choice is like an add quick exit function that lets you specify a callback for when the program gets terminated. So those might be a good opportunity for placing some code to clean up things if necessary at the end. Because one of the big problems of terminating right away is that no destructors get called. So that can cause some problems if it's actually important for things for destructors to be called before the program closes.
Brent? And just for the video, the comment was that one of the other solutions we're looking at are marking up kind of regions of code as meaning no except, so we can kind of control where the cost of exceptions are happening. Oh, question. So the question is about the flat containers. The boost flat containers are implemented as sorted arrays, and there are some other algorithms that can be used for a similar purpose with a flat container. And the answer is yes. So the current paper I have is more of an exploratory paper about the open design points, and one of them is that backing algorithm. And of course, there's trade-offs there. So using, say, the level ordered way gives us much faster lookup, insert, and delete because the items are hotter in cache than they would be with a binary search. But now iterating through the container is jumping back and forth. And so that's not as good when doing algorithms like set union or set difference, which are one of the primary reasons you might want a flat map instead of unordered map, because you need it for those algorithms. So there's some further benchmarks we need to do and kind of analysis of actual use cases, what do people actually need a flat map for. and you know what trade-off is most appropriate there. And then if the trade-off is kind of more even, then do we have a like policy, or do we make two different containers or two different adapters and kind of give users both choices? So the current paper I've put together is, again, asking the committee on feedback, because there's a lot of, they have a lot of opinions on these things. So we'll find out what they say. All right, thank you very much.